Hello and welcome to Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I am, of course, Clayton Ashley.
And I'm Matty Lipchansky.
And we're here for the 16th episode of Enterprise, creatively titled Shuttle Pod 1.
I wonder what that's about.
And it aired the week of February 13th, 2002. Did you have something to say about Shuttle Pod?
No, I wonder, with an episode title like that, you really wonder what's the episode about or where could it possibly be taking place?
Oh, you're right. It is a mystery. Maybe a little bit of misdirection. Or not.
Or maybe it's not. Maybe they're just in Shuttle Pod on the episode.
Because they need it to save on budget.
Man, this is a real, we'll get into it. This is a real super saver kind of episode.
Yeah. Not half bad, though.
Not bad.
Not the worst. But before we get to any real Star Trek discussions, we're a culture podcast, apparently.
Yeah.
And we talk about specifically culture from 2002 now. Mm-hmm. And there was some stuff that happened. Not so much with music. Just to be clear, music is, I think, the thing that's going to evolve the slowest.
Sure.
Partly that's because we're not going by like what came out that week. Mm-hmm. And maybe we should, maybe at some point we'll shift to that more. We're just kind of keeping track of what's hot.
That's a really good point.
And what's hot is still Usher, Nickelback, and Ja Rule. There's just basically the same top three. I tried to find like who was new. And there's just not much going to the top. I mean, beyond those three, we still have Ain't It Funny, In the End, Hey Baby, My Sacrifice, Wherever You Will Go, A Woman's Worth, Get the Party Started. I'll let you figure out the bands there, but that's the rounding out the top ten. It's just
same old, same old.
The
new metal.
The new metal.
Yeah.
It's got a beachhead and it's not giving it up. And that's basically the story as we are in 2002 musically.
Yeah.
But let's look at TV, where the most likely thing you would see if you turn on your TV this week is, of course, did I remember it right? It's the Olympics.
Yeah.
We played that in band for some reason.
Yeah.
Maybe around this time, because it was the Olympics in Salt Lake City, Utah. Of course, we all know this one. It's the one that Mitt Romney saved.
Hmm. Is it? Oh, yeah, I guess so.
They had horribly mismanaged it, apparently, and really... I was reading Wikipedia, and it just kind of sounded like he had, because of his connections with Mormons and Utah, they got it back in the black.
It's so crazy that that was one of his like bona fides for running for president. Remember when you saw bobsleds? You're welcome. Yeah. And it's like
snowboards.
Also, what? Well, yeah, you snowboards and bobsleds. One crazy event, Clayton.
all in one week, a couple, it was 3 weeks actually. We're probably going to talk about this next episode too, because it was still happening.
Yeah.
This is also the first time we had the Olympics back in America since 92.
Yeah.
And we won't have them again until 2028, if they let us keep them. We'll see. So yeah, that was the thing. And it literally did dominate the ratings. It was still a big deal. But, you know, sneaking in there also was still Friends, ER, CSI, Will and Grace, the basics. But I did see an interesting article when I was kind of searching around for what was big this month. Mm. And this is less about this month. It's more just about the context of this year. I mentioned, I think, in a past podcast that this was the year that Fox News like overtook, I think, CNN. And that was kind of a big deal. But that was the actual specific, I think, week or month or something.
Okay.
This is more about the whole year of 2002. And it was the year that basic cable overtook the network.
Ooh.
And that is powered by not just Fox, but like big channels like Discovery, Lifetime. They were like very big enough that you were actually starting to see the shift in what Americans watched.
Ooh. I mean, this is like Lawrence Kansas is like running a cable out to his truck and plugging it in. Like America's changed we've switched it over.
Yeah. He's getting the hookup with Cox Communications. That was what we had around there. COX, just to
be clear. Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is like... we're not at like the reality tipping point yet, which is the the writer strike in a couple of years.
Oh yeah.
In which they realize that they don't have to unionize those shows.
Yes.
And that's why reality TV took over the world for a little while and still remains that important. It's because it's cheaper.
So much cheaper.
But, and they can union bust. But, yeah, that's so interesting. This is now. I guess, yes, yeah, it's people getting really excited about cable news. This is like the cable rise of like 24-hour, the 24-hour news cycle is here. It's here to stay.
Cable news and some of that, and also that, like, I don't know, the bifurcation, the fact that, like, you can find your niche on History Channel or whatever. You know, your cable box is just full of entertainments. And there's a weird thing there where, like, that may be superior to today's streaming, where, you know, a TV show could get a lot of syndication reruns over on basic cable. We're going to miss that soon, but... Yeah, this is definitely the year when it started to change.
Yeah.
The other thing is movies, of course. Mm-hmm. Because I guess just to be clear here, I looked at news and there just wasn't much happening. I guess the Olympics was just sucking the air out of the room. The main thing I saw is that Enron is still continuing to be a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
And somehow the people running it still don't think that they're going to completely implode. They still seem to think they're going to make it out of this. But movies, though. Movies was the thing where I got some good examples of 2002. So actually, number one opening this week, Collateral Damage.
Ooh. Collateral Damage.
Yeah. Not Collateral. This is, unfortunately, Collateral Damage. Although I kind of want to catch up on this one that, again, I'd never heard of this. Arnold Schwarzenegger was a firefighter, and he avenges the death of his family by going to Colombia and, I guess, killing... I just wrote here, and killing cocaine.
What? This isn't real.
He punches cocaine to death. Here's the thing. Are you looking into
it? I'm looking into it.
I wanted to see. There's excellent cast and has two great Johns, and I wanted to see if you could guess the two.
Okay. It's got two great Johns in the cast. It's got Totoro and Leguizamo in one film?
Oh,
my
film.
God. Wait a minute. I'm there, man. It's got Jane Lynch.
Yeah, also, I saw that. Jane Lynch is an FBI agent,
what
I guess.
What the fuck? This, wait, I gotta watch this film, man. So
it's interesting. There's not much about its production, but this was one of those movies that was like completely delayed by September 11th. It was supposed to come out in October in 2001. And they're like, oh, no. They took all the advertising down because it had like a bomb going off in America. I think I think that's like the opening scene, basically, where his family dies that he has to avenge. And it's definitely interesting in how it represents both of the things of like in the 90s, the other production note I found was that they were going to just make it, you know, terrorists in the Middle East or something. But they were literally like, that's overplayed. Let's do Colombia. That's new. That's hot. It's in the news. So we're going to move down to like cartels.
Bizarre.
And that's how you get a movie like this where a firefighter goes to fight drug cartels.
Why are terrorists killing a firefighter's wife and son? Whatever.
I don't. Also, I mean, I just Arnold Schwarzenegger, which is always funny when this giant Austrian man is just like, I am American firefighter.
Yeah,
like,
it is me.
That was almost
hello,
Russian,
it is me, Captain Gordy Brewer. Wow. I can't do a Schwarzenegger either. I'm not even going to fucking attempt it.
Wow, it's me. That's how I get into it. Oh, I'm a firefighter.
There, oh, you got it. You're into it.
I have to kill the cocaine. But it's just whenever he's in one of these movies, it's so funny to me when it's just like, I am typical American. I can't say American in his. I'm just gonna give
okay.
up on that. But he's
imagining. You can imagine
like
Arnold in your head.
I can. Yeah, you
listeners,
all, you can. You'll hear it.
Yeah.
Hear Arnold saying cocaine in your head. hear Arnold Schwarzenegger saying Michael Caine.
This is a real fun time for Leguizamo in his career. Where it's like John Leguizamo as
right.
Felix Ramirez, the manager of a cocaine distribution facility. And it's like, all right. Just a bizarre sort of like, we need, like the energy that he's going to have in this movie, I'm sure is incredible.
Yes. I was immediately excited to see him in there. I'm sure Totoro is very dramatic. And I like Schwarzenegger. I watched a lot of his movies in high school and college. And going back to his early stuff, more modern stuff, he's a real Hollywood star, I think, even though it's always a little strange with his accent what they make him play. He's charismatic in a way that's very entertaining, and I'm gonna check this out at some point. So next, that was number one, beating out A Beautiful Mind. Number three, Black Hawk Down. Four, Monte Cristo. Five, I Am Sam. Lord of the Rings, still hanging around. At seven, though, we get something interesting. Rollerball.
Oh, the movie that sent, to jail.
Now, wait a minute.
Yeah.
John
McTiernan. Yeah. No, I don't want to get, this is like, Blank Check literally just did the whole series on McTiernan. But something happened funny with like the Rollerball financing, and McTiernan ends up in fucking prison, I'm pretty sure.
No, wait. Okay, and this is 1970, this is the thing, this is a remake. Okay, so yes, 2002 is the John McTiernan one. This is a remake of a 1975 movie that some people consider all right. The 2001
Sorry. He did not go to jail. Somebody went to jail though. And basically, John McTiernan went to movie jail. He's not allowed to make movies anymore.
Okay. Well, I mean, based on the quality of this one, I think they probably wouldn't have let him anyway.
A bad movie that stinks.
I enjoyed looking into it and the fact that this movie that came out in 2002 about a dystopian future takes place in 2005.
Yeah.
There's something very funny to me about that. It's got a Slipknot cameo, which is also ill portents for a dystopian future. They still exist. Mm-hmm. It stars LL Cool J. He's in there as a young man. But yeah, it sounds awful. Apparently it did not keep up with the incisive cultural critique of the first movie and is more about gory action.
Yeah.
Did not do well.
Well.
Yeah. But you could go see that. And then, we have the Mothman prophecies.
Mothman.
And the Mothman. And Snow Dogs rounding at the bottom of the list. But right there at eight, underneath Rollerball, is Big Fat Liar.
Ooh, the Giamatti Muniz joint.
Yes, we got Frankie Muniz, height of his young career. Yeah. It's like a teen movie, movie producer steals a kid's script and no one believes him because he's cried wolf. I think it's that kind of thing, that modern folk tales.
Yes.
The thing that I was interested in about this is when I looked into it, I found out that Frankie Muniz basically stopped acting around 2008 to become a race car driver.
Yeah, he loves and he racing.
Is, yeah.
Do you remember?
He is today in NASCAR.
Yeah, so insanely, they were filming some documentary with Muniz, and he was at the race where Dale Earnhardt crashed.
He was, and they were doing the doc because he was driving the pace car for that race. And so that was I think the earliest time he got to be in a pace car. And then he was there and he watched Dale Earnhardt die. And he's like,
I gotta be me. That is really funny.
Which is bizarre, but good for him. He's chasing his dream, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, almost every NASCAR driver has watched somebody die. Like every NASCAR driver driving today watched Dale Earnhardt die and was like, get me in the mix.
But it was already their job, and he had a good job, I guess. I mean, maybe he didn't, because it kind of sounds like his acting career as he got older sort of
but
died.
He was on a sitcom that had they definitely hit the the 100 episode threshold or whatever.
Malcolm
Middle had 151 episodes, which means he is set for life. Because that motherfucker is going to run syndication, in syndication forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And he's going to get royalty checks forever.
He also, he had a heart condition or something. And apparently he has been afflicted with amnesia.
Whoa.
And does not remember most of the filming of Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah.
And Bryan Cranston has to remind him of the good times they had on set. I was like, oh, no. But yeah, all that happened after 2002. That wasn't the height of culture. Was an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, Rollerball.
Yeah.
Or Big Fat Liar. But still, continues to be so impressive to me. The variety on hand at this just fucking middle of February movies. It's I'm still a little jealous of it.
Yeah.
But that's the quick overview of our culture from 2002. So Maddie, if you want to take the command chair, ooh, I'll just get out of here. Sorry.
Yeah, okay, let's get some chair foley.
Yeah. Okay. And you, yeah.
Great, we've swapped chairs. And now I'm in the captain's seat. And I'm here to talk to you about it. That's right, baby. It is. Sorry, I was not pulling something up at all. Yeah. So the episode is called Shuttle Pod 1. And it is an episode that was not bad. But if I just like told you what happened in it, we'd be out of here in 5 minutes.
Yeah, this is, I feel like already there was pretty light on culture. This might be a little light of an episode because the episode is...
Not much going on this week in the universe and the universe of Star Trek colon Enterprise.
Why not?
Fucking, we're getting loosey-goosey here. We drank a whole thing of bourbon locked in a space shuttle.
Yeah.
So the cold open is Reed and Tucker are in like an asteroid field and they're in the shuttle pod one, which is the name of the episode. Something's wrong with the shuttle, like the sensor array and the communications are all goofed up. And then they kind of like, they feel like, you know, they go around the side of an asteroid and Reed is like, yo, what's that? And they see an impact crater and a bunch of debris on it. And the wreckage is the Enterprise. It's been a long time. Getting from there to here. Been a long time. Keep talking.
I was confused about this. I don't hate a good cold open. You know, catching up, it requires effort, gets you invested in the show. But I was so confused at the beginning.
I also didn't catch that it was the Enterprise.
Like, they really didn't want to show the, just say, make it say Enterprise. No. They showed like half of the NX-01,
yeah,
I think.
I was just like, oh, I guess some ship crashed.
And then I was trying to remember, it was like, was this a time travel one? Are they finding like a duplicate of it?
Yeah.
And it pieces it out so slowly that like, no, they were doing a rescue mission and the Enterprise's like hatch got blown up and it, I don't know.
The mechanics by which the episode, which again, once they get into the part that is the episode, it's not bad. But the mechanics by which they get there make no fucking sense. So we get back into the show, the song ends. And we are crucially as far from hearing the song again as I will be for the next week of my life. So on the Enterprise, you see the Enterprise. Everyone's fine. Hoshi's there and was like, she goes to Archer and she's like, we've got some Tesnians on the ship. Phlox has them all in the fucking decom chamber. They need to breathe boron gas or whatever.
Sounds cool. Can we see what they
look
like?
Clayton, you can't.
Oh,
damn. It sounds like the Enterprise's launch door, like the launch bay door, was damaged in some sort of accident that the Tesnians are apologizing for. And there was a big explosion and a bunch of damage. And you're like, hey, can we see that? And the episode's like, no!
Sounds like a sick episode that's happening off screen.
Absolutely not. Can you see the guys who breathe boron gas crash their ship into the Enterprise? Anyways, so Paul and Archer like go out in a shuttle pod to inspect the damage. And T'Pol is like, I think it was little teeny tiny black holes did this. And Archer is like, Vulcans are so superstitious about little teeny tiny black holes, dude. You guys are so stupid. You love little teeny tiny black holes so much. You're always talking about them, Vulcans.
You're like, oh, time travel, that doesn't exist, but little tiny black
little
holes?
Little teeny tiny black holes would have to exist for time travel to be real. Which is so funny that Vulcans love little teeny tiny black holes. They call them microsingularities. And like, and Archer's like, well, that's like a Vulcan myth. Like, I'm racist against Vulcans for loving little black holes. But also, I mean, I feel like, am I wrong? This ties into time travel stuff.
I looked at the Alpha One thing about it because I was curious if this was something that like they're foreshadowing, and I mostly found references to Voyager, so you'd know better than me.
I don't remember micro singularities in Voyager too much, but also who cares. But it was,
so wait, before we go any farther, I did want to, just because this always makes me so frustrated specifically, I just wrote down here in my brief notes about the episode, what is Britain?
I was also thinking,
and that
about
is
this.
The like beginning of the episode is once again, them talking a bit about like,
oh yeah,
sort of what's going on Earth. They're talking about like the curriculum. Malcolm is talking about British curriculum has us taught about something or other, and it's like, so there is Britain, I guess Britain, and then they start talking about like Europeans, and how if only the Vulcans had landed in Europe, the Vulcans would have gotten along better. And it's like, I mean, that is kind of the story of this series.
Yeah.
but they met him on Tannen. It's
bizarre. And then like you see Malcolm's parents, they don't live in England, but he like
they don't. Yeah. No, that's right. And he also I guess the one thing that's a note to the world building is that he's not Tucker, though he comes from Kentucky, does not come from the United States. It is North Americans read nothing but those ridiculous comic books and sci-fi novels.
Mm-hmm.
It always annoys me.
Very
so
bizarre.
Much.
Yeah, there's like, again, you know, it's the sort of thing where this show just does such a poor job of building out the world. And again, I am not, crucially, I am not a world building bitch. I kind of don't care if it all is laid out for me in a way that's legible or whatever. I just need it to be consistent on your end. And you keep giving me, and like, I want the world to feel big and unexplored. And you keep telling me things directly that are stupid and contradictory. So I need you to fucking figure it out. There's fucking comic books after World War III. That's what the first things we got back is warp speed and comic books.
Yeah, and we're gonna get to it later where they're both talking about like reading what is it, Ulysses, and
yeah, something else. He says that he was reading. He had Ulysses with him on to read like on the return trip, and Tucker was like, I'd rather like do some really meaningless task on the ship than wade through that thing.
It's this like there's no new culture in 150 years.
Yeah, I mean this happens on like the better Star Trek shows too, though, where it's like Jean-Luc Picard is like always talking about fucking Ulysses and things like that.
Well, I guess it's if we get luxury space communism but no new culture.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
Strange. Okay. So, you know, they're going and they're surveying the ship to Pol and Archer. And she's like, no, is micro singularities and the polarized hull plating protected the Enterprise. Fucking whatever. This is like the dumbest subplot in the world. They're like, okay, we're going to go to Tesnia because there was like, we're getting all these people back from this accident. And then Archer's like, we'll get back to the rendezvous point before Tucker and Reed get there. No problemo. Back on the shuttle pod, Tucker and Reed are like, they think the Enterprise has crashed. So at this point in the episode, I'm like, oh, the Enterprise crashed. That's what they think, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very poorly displayed to me in this visual medium.
Yes.
And
because they have no way of, they have no sensors, no way of getting closer to it. They saw enough debris to just be like, yep, that's it. They're dead.
Right. And they're like, we only have 10 days of breathable air, which I was like, this is a stupid, if you only had 10 days of breathable air, you shouldn't have done a 10-day rendezvous thing with the ship.
Yeah.
That's my thoughts. And the ship is also like leaving and not telling them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also if they did tell them, there's no way of them contacting, no pinging back to be like message received.
So I think again, they're not really, I think, thinking much about this context about two dorks thinking about some of these things too much, but they make the point that the speed the ship goes is so infinitesimal. Even if they had been charging for 10 days, if the Enterprise goes back to this spot, they'll be like 20 feet away. It's like, oh, there you are.
Yeah.
Like they can't get far, I guess is the point, yeah. But they're like, still like, well, we're just going to aim our ship that way. So our skeletons,
our bodies will be recoverable. And it's like, that's stupid. Yeah. Like wouldn't the recovery team go to the destruction site of the flagship of the fleet? I don't know. Maybe. Anyways, but they're like, we're going to go there to Echo 3, which is like the nearest station or subspace amplifier. And Reed is like, this is pointless. But they agree. They argue. But they're like, okay, we'll try to get help.
Yeah. Malcolm is pessimistic.
Yeah.
Trip is optimistic. Yes. And they're clashing heads about
it. And then it's just like, okay, Reed is like recording log entries being like, you're going to find my skeleton and I'll be dead. And that's fine. I loved to be on the crew of the ship before I was turned tragically into a skeleton. And then Tucker's like, you're being a pessimist. Like, what's wrong with you? And they argue a bunch more and they fucking find about like, oh, we're moving too slow to get anywhere. It's like they're like talking in circles at each other the whole episode.
Yep.
And then they have some fucking rations and they find some bourbon that Archer left in the shuttle for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah. To gift someone? It was...
The episode doesn't even explain it. They're like, he put it here for some reason. I don't know why.
Good thing we have... Yeah.
It sounds like video game dialogue.
They're really trying hard to make this like literally a lifeboat episode. So they also have some like whiskey on the whiskey ration.
Fine.
But the whole thing of them butting heads with their views of what's happening is also kind of like contrived, because Malcolm has to be recording his annoying diaries. It's like, dude, write it down. write it in a journal. I guess this is like what happens when you make all your computers vocal based.
Yeah, but. And also like half the ship does seem to be a soundboard. Like, oh, there's all these buttons in front of him and they're all for recording the messages. It's like, some of that stuff be for flying the ship? I don't know.
He definitely presses a button that says something like power routing when he's like pausing and recording angrily. And
that's,
it's like,
so
they didn't care to change that, whatever.
But they have some rations. They start, you know, take out the bourbon. And then, you know, that night, Tucker can't sleep and Reed is like dictating a letter to a former girlfriend and he's driving Tucker nuts. And then, Tucker's like, go to sleep, Reed. Reed wakes up in the medical bay and their presence and Phlox is there and Archer is there and T'Pol is there and you were there and you were there and Clayton, you were there too.
Oh, I was there.
T'Pol is like, thank you for being heroic. Vulcans are very attractive to bravery. And Reed is like, they used to call me stinky. And then they fuck. and then Reed wakes up and he's like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
It's important to know here that Reed is not gay.
Reed is not gay.
He's not gay.
He wants to have sex with the lady on the ship. One of the two ladies on the ship. Anyways, they start working on like the receiver or whatever. Their transmitter's not working. I don't know. They start doing some stuff and they just like seal a joint with some mashed potatoes. It's like some fun, like, we're stuck in space and stuff is broken. We're doing Apollo 13, boys, get in, you know, like very.
Those are the bright moments of this.
Yes.
And they have, I think we're going to get to it. They have one particularly good long scene, but so much of the lead up to this is just like you said, talking in circles. It's unclear even exactly what the danger is or what happened or how they got in this situation. Yeah. That feels like it should be simple to set up. Like they got in a lifeboat, an emergency happened. But the fact that feels so like murky is annoying for what otherwise could have been a pretty fine episode.
Yeah, it's like halfway through the episode. It's like now we're doing it and that's 15 minutes of stuff. So then they're like, they sit down and they're like reminiscing. And Tucker is like, I used to have sex with this waitress at a club. Named Ruby, and she was like the one that got away. And Reed is like, I also used to have sex with Ruby all the time. And Tucker's like, I guess we have more in common than I thought, having sex with women. And they're just like, and then Tucker's like, I can like lower the temperature and we'll live for an extra half a day, but we'll be freezing. And Reed is like, I guess that sucks, but like it's an extra half day.
For me to write these vocal audio diaries.
Record some more diaries. Reed shaves for some reason. And Tucker's like, what are you doing? And he's like, officers need to look good. And Tucker's like, immediately what I said too out loud, which is that your hair and your nails keep growing after a while, after you die.
Now, hold on. Not that it matters here. But isn't it not that your hair keeps growing, but that your skin pulls tighter against your... your body and the hair like pushes out?
That's
more.
Probably true. I don't like that.
Sorry.
Okay. Anyways, back on Enterprise, T'Pol is like, I got an important discovery for you, Captain. Little teeny tiny black hole.
She was right.
And she hands him like a little thing that's just like an iPad with a picture of the Enterprise on it. And she's circled where the teeny tiny black holes are. And he's like,
I found three.
This doesn't really matter.
We don't have time for this.
But that just means maybe they got hit with the little teeny tiny black holes too. And that fucked up something on the ship. So we should get in touch with them and set a different rendezvous point. Because they don't have the hole plating or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's why we talked about the teeny tiny black holes for 10 minutes on the episode for some reason.
Oh, yeah. So I don't know if this happened when they were in that first drunken
stupor. Oh, the drunken stupor has not happened yet.
Okay. But I know it's before they get the call from Enterprise, because this happens before they realize they're alive again.
Yeah.
Is that they're having a conversation and they mention that Travis and Hoshi are 24 and 25
years
old.
That's just about to happen. Yeah.
Is okay. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, like Reed's like still recording letters to girlfriends and he keeps recording the same letter over and over but changing their name. And Tucker's like, stop it. And he's like, no, I will never stop. And then they start talking and it's like, Travis and Hoshi are only 24 or 25. And I also was like, okay, Travis, maybe. Hoshi was 24?
It was like a professor. Like, I guess she's a prodigy as part of her thing, but it's
all right. And they start talking about like how they loved everybody on the ship so much. Reed's like, you're being too optimistic. Tucker's like, shut up. I hate your fucking letters, you dumb asshole.
So there's a thing here that I read some of the production notes because I was just curious about, like, yes, it was a budget play.
Shocking.
Yeah, shocking. But the thing that I saw was how much the actor for Malcolm like fucking loved this episode, because he was like, it was a real acting like challenge for me.
That's crazy.
When he put it this way, that these phone calls, like how he sounds and he's reminiscing about this, the implication is supposed to be that like he may not even ever had romantic relationship with these women, or maybe he had like a date, maybe he had sex, but it's actually meant to imply that he barely knew them, because he is incapable of making connections with people.
Yeah,
and this is actually pathetic that this person who like barely knows him is going to get this letter of him like, my skeleton's floating in space, but I thought of you before I died. Like,
man, that barely came through.
It barely came through. Like, I was just like, this is just like tiring. Is that he has sex with lots of women? It, like, he did not really, to me, portray it. I guess we get to his like reveal, but that didn't like then make me recontextualize those until I read this later.
Yeah.
So that's what's supposed
also,
to be going on here.
The other thing about the acting with him is he gets real drunk, and his drunk acting is horrible. but like almost nobody's good at like drunk acting, but he was quite bad.
Yeah, it's very silly.
So Tucker opens the bourbon and reads like, I don't drink on duty. And Tucker's like, shut up, bitch. We're dying. they toast to the Enterprise. And then Tucker's like, I always had a hard time getting close to people, my family, girlfriends, whatever.
Is it Tucker or it was Malcolm?
Malcolm says that, sorry.
Or is this Tucker?
Malcolm says that.
Oh, yeah. And Tucker, I think specifically, he takes out a little, like, I don't know, a lantern or something and lights a candle.
Yeah. Very strange. Anyways.
He's getting kind of emo.
Yes.
Here.
They get very drunk and they're freezing. So they're all bundled up. They start laughing about how the universe isn't going to take any of their bourbon. Reed starts talking about T'Pol's bum.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool and normal. And definitely not
having really cool conversations because you're not gay.
Yeah. And also very not indicative of the show's attitude towards T'Pol and the actress that played her. They get a transmission and they're like, new rendezvous point. And, like, oh no, we can't get there. It's 2 days away. And there's not enough air left. We don't have 2 days of air. And to me, I was like, them not responding to the hail seems important. I don't know. And they don't seem to care on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Just fine.
Nah.
Whatever.
I mean, for the drama.
For the drama.
So yeah, sorry, wait. Is this little, because the scene where he pulls out the candle, did I jump the gun? Has that not actually happened yet?
That already happened.
So the thing I liked about that was it is where we finally, I thought, got some okay Malcolm acting, where he does reveal the fact that he is like incapable of making human connections.
Yeah.
He's actually putting a front on a lot of the time. Like, it's pretty good. And the thing here you get is that like Trip has also become morose. Like, he was so optimistic and now he's just like, fuck it, I'm gonna light this candle. I don't even care that this costs us a couple more minutes of our precious life. And he's sitting in the corner with his hood up, and then after, like, Malcolm just lays his heart out, Trip like puts out the candle and says, you know, 5 or 6 more minutes sounds kind of nice right about now. And it's like, okay. That was
nice.
Like, I like that there was some a little bit of action. Like, we actually had a character communicating his feelings without talking, and the other character is like, what he said affected him, and it was like, that was nice, that was good, and that's what you want from an episode like this, a like kind of bottle episode, I guess. And it made me think about the, like, what if it was truly a bottle episode, in that, because I do like this fact also about it, it's definitely what they're going for with the budget, but we never see outside their shuttle pod. Like, anytime we're in the shuttle pod, we don't know what's going on outside. We can't, I mean, except for that one shot of them seeing the crash wreckage, but like, it is this very like claustrophobic kind of thing that gets better as they're more desperate, and then as the like situation changes, what they, you know, think what they're surviving for, like when they find out the Enterprise is going here in a bit, is alive, you know, that changes their context too. And then, like you said, then they suddenly find out, oh, we don't actually have enough air to make it there. And they're more desperate again. There is good stuff here. It's just, I wish they would have leaned into it more, honestly. And we don't know what the Enterprise is thinking this whole time.
Yeah. And then Reed is like, this is like, we're on the desert island and the plane is flying overhead and we can't do anything about it. And he's like, wait, what if we shoot our weapons off or make like a stink? So like their sensors see something. He's like, what if we explode the impulse engine? And Tucker's like, I'm not going to explode the impulse engine. I'm an engineer. We can't get rid of our only engine. And then Reed's like, we're fucking doing it. And Tucker's like, fine, I'll blow it up.
What else are we going to do?
As they're waiting, they do it and they're hoping it works. And while they're waiting for the ship,
desperation sets in.
And Tucker's like, I'm going to kill myself. So there's double the air while you wait. Now, another thing here.
One of us can win.
Why doesn't the fucking Enterprise ping them like, was that you? Are you okay?
Yeah. I mean, that's the implication here is that what they're relying on is that the Enterprise will freak out when they don't talk. But as to your point, that seems to be a thing where it's like, well, you know, we're going warp 2. Let's go a little faster here. They're not talking to us for some reason. It does seem like the kind of thing that would, especially since they now literally know there are micro singularities in the area.
Yeah. I just, whatever.
The thing, though, about this, like, they're getting more desperate. They're, like, it seems like it's gotten colder. Like, because they're trying to find more ways to save on power.
Yeah.
And they're in their blankets now, and they put on the baseball caps. And Maddie?
Yeah.
This time it got me. I went to Paramount.com, and I purchased myself an NX-01
hat. Oh, my God! You only got one?
I only got one. Okay. I'm sorry,
it's
man.
It's okay.
This is what happens when I watch the show in the middle of the night and I don't have very good impulse control.
Sure. Oh, I do see this hat, though. This font is really gnarly.
That's the thing about it. I kind of like how it looks.
I like how it's got, no branding on the back.
That's the other thing. It's just, it doesn't say what it is, and then I can hide.
Oh, no, the side says Enterprise, my man.
Does it? Well,
I can see that, I think.
This is what I meant by I lacked impulse control.
Yeah, you really... Oh, well, okay. Well, if anybody wants to send me one, hit me up. That's crazy, Clayton. I can't believe you did that. Anyways, Reed pulls a gun.
Crazy.
Reed pulls a gun on Tucker. Yeah. He's like, no, motherfucker, I will stun you. And I was like...
I'm going to die.
We're both going to die together.
Yeah.
And then they sit down, and they both wake up in sick bay. And it looks like they found them with a couple hours to go. And the impulse drive explosion worked, and they only had a couple of hours of air left. And then Reed is like, T'Pol, do you want to have sex with me right now? And she's like, what are you talking about? Go to bed. And he's like, this is real. This is not a dream.
Yeah.
End of episode, I guess.
Which, again, would have hit better if we literally hadn't seen Enterprise except in that one other dream sequence. And, you know, they're setting it up exactly the same way. The same three people are there.
That would have been effective had we had not seen Enterprise the whole episode.
But they didn't commit,
no, because
I don't think, well to the bottle episode.
This podcast does not fix Enterprise, but it's like easy peasy. Don't show Enterprise at all. And then after they get the signal coming in from Enterprise, Tucker's asleep and Reed's like, am I hallucinating again?
Oh, fuck.
Right? And then at the end, you see the Enterprise.
Damn.
Clayton, this shit is easy. Sorry.
Especially there, because then you could get a shift with the person who's now, like, hopeful because he thinks he heard Enterprise, and Tucker's like, you're losing oxygen. Like, we had to turn off the scrubbers.
Easy,
like, it's not real.
Peasy, lemon, squeezy, in my opinion. Yeah. This shit is not hard.
Making a TV show is easy. That's the thing.
Making a TV
here.
Show is easy. If you fuck up at all, if there's anything wrong with your stuff at all, I will come to your house. I will kick your ass because it's so. I'll make a whole podcast about how you suck, Brandon Braga. I'll fucking come down there right now. Figure it out.
Figure it out,
Brandon Braga.
It is funny that I think Brandon said later about this episode that it is so simple. It's like, this could have been a play. They could have made this
at the top
traveling
at
show.
At the top of the episode, I could have said Malcolm and Trip get stuck on a shuttle pod. And then they wait a couple of days and the Enterprise shows up. That's the episode.
That was the episode.
Good podcast. Watching this episode the whole time, I was kind of like, this isn't so bad. And I'm talking about it. I'm like, this sucks. I'm fucking pissed off. I made myself angry.
I'm a little, the fact that so many of them who made it liked it. I was like, this is what you think is quality. No. Last week is quality. Tran is quality. Get him back.
Can you imagine if it was a bottle episode and it's Archer and Tran? Or Clayton, two Trans. Tran on Tran on Tran?
Tran,
Tran for Tran?
He would have made it great.
Tran Club.
A Tran Clone episode.
Oh, I thought you said Tran Club, and I was like, I'm in the Tran. I'm Tran in the Club. Tran Club.
We can.
Is that what our Patreon are... should be called?
Tran Club.
The Tran Club.
Yeah, that's only a place for people who accept Tran in their hearts.
If you accept Tran in your heart, you should join the Tran Club for just $1 a month.
There's bonuses episodes there too, but it's mostly a place to talk.
It's mostly a place to find fellow Tran Traniacs.
So yeah, this has been another TCW.
That's right, baby.
Temporal Culture War. I am Clayton Ashley.
And I'm Maddie Lubchansky. I have a quick plug.
Yes, yes, yes.
If you are in New York, or any of the five boroughs, or nearby, I'm doing a show at the Bell House with a different podcast, with Gender Reveal, with my friends Tuck and Calvin. It is a fun little, what if a variety show was good and fun and funny? But we have tickets they're on sale now for the Bell House. May 9th is when the show is. Genderpodcast.com/live is where you can get a ticket.
Heck yes. Love the Bell House.
Okie doke.
Check that out. And we'll see you again in the next after 2 weeks.
And as always, let's go.
Let's go.